If you want to pump your body and expand your mind, there's only one place to go. Mind Pump. Mind Pump. With your hosts, Sal DiStefano, Adam Schaefer, and Justin Andrews.
In this episode of Mind Pump, the world's top fitness, health, and entertainment podcast, we answer fitness and health questions that are asked by viewers and listeners just like you. They go to our Instagram page, they post questions, we pick the best ones, and then we answer them in these episodes. Now, the way we open this episode is with the introductory portion. This is where we talk about current events, things that are in the news, talk about our lives. Sometimes we mention sponsors. In today's episode, the intro portion was 38 minutes long. So if you want just the fitness stuff, you can fast forward, get to the fitness questions. If you want to have fun, though, start at the very beginning.
Stick around.
By the way, you can actually see everything timestamped with our every episode, every podcast, and you can find exactly what you want to listen to or what question you want us to answer. Just go to mindpumppodcast.com. So let me give you a breakdown of this episode. We open up by talking about Nicolas Cage. He's that actor from the 90s and early 2000s.
He's in everything.
That might be in
him and Kevin Bacon.
A little bit of trouble. Then we talked about Justin's wife, Courtney. We talked all about that and her trip
to have done that.
To that safari place.
Yeah.
Then I talked about Russia's phase 3 trial of their vaccine on their population. They're going to just test it on everybody.
Oh my God. Pray for them.
Find out what's going on. Then I talked about exercise and its effect on your immune system. Some cool studies just came out showing the positive impact. It's really powerful on your immune system.
Exercise is essential, Sal.
Then we talked about baseball. That was boring. Then we talked about the show on Netflix called Love on the Spectrum. Super endearing. Highly recommended.
Great show.
Then we talked about a company that we're working with called Pluto. They make customizable pillows. So these are pillows that you can actually customize to your height, your weight, if you like your pillows to be warm or cool, a lot of different things. And as a result, you sleep way better. The experience is amazing with this company. And sleep is so important for health, fat loss, and muscle building. And your pillow actually makes a pretty big impact on that. And because you're listening to Mind Pump, you get a discount. So here's what you do. Go to PlutoPillow.com. That's PlutoPillow.com/mindpump. You fill out the questionnaire to get an individualized pillow recommended to you, and then use the code mindpump and you'll get a full 10% off. Then I talked about Adam's long legs and Justin's short legs,
which is inaccurate,
which led me to talk about our sponsor, Vuori, that now increased the seam size for women's pants in their lineup. Vuori makes amazing athleisure wear clothing with a lifetime guarantee. Okay, so for as long as you own the product, if something happens, return it, get a brand new one.
If you're doing karate kicks like me, you still can send them back.
He practices karate all the time at night. If you want the Mind Pump discount, which is huge, 25% off, here's what you got to do. Go to vuoriclothing.com. That's vuoriclothing.com/mindpump, and you'll get that 25% off. And then we talk about long-term health and financial wealth. Then we got into answering the questions. Here's the first one. This person wants to know how to add isometric or dynamic tension exercises into their routine. In terms of isometric and dynamic training, which, by the way, have tremendous value for muscle building, strength, and performance, that is actually in our performance MAPS performance program. We do put isometrics in there. That program, by the way, is also 50% off all month long. Just go to mapsgreen.com. That's MAPSGREEN.com. And then use the code GREEN50. That's GREEN50. No space for the 50% off discount. By the way, there's an at-home mod added to that, so you can actually follow the whole workout with just a pair of dumbbells. The next question, this person wants to know why processed foods add so much water under the skin. Why do I get so bloated when I have processed foods? The third question, this person wants to know what our thoughts are on intra-workout carbohydrates. Are they valuable? And the final question, this person wants to know if foam rolling should be done before or after a workout. Also, we are launching a brand new MAPS workout program.
Da, 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 da.
Now, this next program is exceptional because, besides the fact that it builds a lot of muscle, burns body fat, gets you fit like all MAPS programs, this one is exceptional for at-home or basically anywhere type
super
workouts.
Super convenient.
It's MAPS Suspension. So this program uses suspension trainers. That's it. So all you need are a pair of suspension trainers, and you can follow the full workout and train your entire body, you know, shoulders, biceps, triceps, back, chest, your core, your legs, your butt, everything with this entire program. Suspension trainers are very versatile. This program is appropriate for everybody. If you're a beginner, you adjust the leverage to make it easy. If you're advanced, this workout can really kick your butt. Now, because it's a brand new launch and it's a brand new program, and of course, this program, like all of the MAPS programs, is fully instructional. Okay, so you go in there, you got video demos, how many rep sets, and basically it's a personal trainer on your computer. Because it's a launch, we're offering it at discount. This is a very, very short time that we're offering this, but every time we launch a brand new MAPS program, this is what we do. So if you want to take a look at MAPS suspension and get the $20 off that we're offering, which is the launch price, here's what you got to do. Go to mapssuspension.com. That's mapssuspension.com. And then use the code suspension20. So that's the word suspension and the number 20, no space. That'll give you $20 off, and you'll get the full program sent to your email and access for life. Hey, Justin, did you know that Nicolas Cage's son, you ever hear about his son?
No, I haven't heard anything about his son. Guy. Only Nick Cage.
This is a picture of him.
What?
Look at this. So this is Nicolas Cage's son.
Dude.
He
looks like he's in a death metal.
He is. And he used to be in a black metal band. That's dude. And he invented a type of music called ghost metal. There's pictures of Nicolas Cage walking with his son, and he's like dark eye makeup and straight black hair and all black clothes, and he looks like a demon walking next to his dad.
That's the most amazing thing.
If you're the kid of a Hollywood star,
it's like you have to be weird.
I was gonna say, what are the shots? You're either one. I think you become an actor, actress, or just a fucking weirdo.
Yeah.
So then I went down this rabbit hole of Nicolas Cage. So I'm like, what is this all about? Like, what's his son band, you know, into or what, all that stuff?
Yeah, what's his band name?
And then I found this, dude. So Nicolas Cage blew $150 million fortune. So he had a fortune of $150 million.
What?
Dude.
Bankrupt.
No wonder he's in every film.
Bro,
bankrupt.
So he would purchase things like, and it was totally like.
So this Nicolas Cage went bankrupt, not his son.
No, Nicolas Cage, well, I'm sure, you know, by proxy now, his son's bankrupt too, right?
Because
his son, I don't know how much money his son makes with his ghost metal band.
What did he do with $150 million?
Well, so in 2009, he owed $6.3 million in property taxes. But here's some of his purchases that are hilarious. At one point, he bought a dinosaur skull. for $300,000.
Do you know that's what you do?
No, that's like, so I was watching, what show was that? I'm watching my sister turned me on to like one of these like crazy exotic homes that are like 30, 40, $100 million homes. And that's like a thing. Like if you got that kind of money where you buy $100 million homes.
What kind of prehistoric?
No, they do. They that's always like part of the decor is always like some dinosaur relic that costs like $1.2 million, some bones. Like really?
Yeah. This toilet paper is made from Egyptian mummy wrappings. You know, the 3,000. So and that reminds me of, did you guys ever watch the Chappelle Show?
Yeah.
Do you remember the episode where he was acting like a super rich actor, and then he's like, it's like a Cribs, MTV.
Oh,
Cribs,
yeah, yeah.
And the camera's on him, and he opens his fridge to make breakfast, and he has like a raptor egg that he cracks into the pan and scrambles it up.
Yeah.
So there's more. He had a prehistoric bear skull that was worth hundreds of thousands of dollars that he accidentally destroyed when he was playing pool.
Oops.
One day. He bought islands in the Bahamas worth, you know, millions and millions of dollars. At one point, he owned 15 residences simultaneously, including a $25 million waterfront home in Newport Beach. He had another $15 million countryside estate in Rhode Island, another $8 million estate in Las Vegas.
Oh, my dang. God. He was just spending it like it was never going
to
go
away. He
like
bought
leveraged it to all hell to have all that.
Dude, he bought two European castles. One was an 11th century Bavarian castle in Germany.
What?
Yeah. His cars, like
his son, probably lives there.
Bro, you have to fire your accountant.
Dude, he's blaming it on his accountant.
Oh, is that what he's doing?
Yes, dude.
Because his accountant didn't say shit.
Dude, at one point he bought a Lamborghini off of the Shah of Iran that cost him $500,000. So anyway, these are,
I mean, yeah, normal purchases. Yeah.
He at one point it gets better. At one point, he owned four yachts all at once. One of them worth $20 million.
I did not know Nick Cage was balling like that.
Yeah, yeah, that had 12 master bedrooms, dude. Yeah, he leveraged the hell out of himself.
Yeah.
Now, what do you when
all
you
that, all that Con Air?
When you read all that, what do you think? What, as a person, like, why are you doing that? Like, what's your read on that?
I think you're trying to find excitement in life. Maybe you're bored, so it's kind of like an addiction. You know, people get that like shopping addiction. This is just he has a lot of money,
yeah.
So it goes crazy. It gets funnier, dude. He bought this haunted house that apparently at one point belonged to serial killer Madame Delphine LaLaurie.
What?
So in New Orleans, which between, this is a true story. I don't know if you guys ever, do you guys ever watch that show, American Ghost Horror Hunters? Story? No, American Horror Story.
Yeah.
They based this character off of her. So between 1787 and 1849, she tortured and murdered countless slaves that she owned in her household. So he bought that house because he thought, oh, this is interesting.
Yeah, buy that. Yeah.
At one point, he bought a tombstone that was... It was a 9-foot tall pyramid shaped tombstone in the stone in the oldest cemetery in New Orleans. So, I mean, this goes to show that you could have lots of money and still be totally broke.
Yeah.
Because of the way you manage.
Now, when did he officially go bankrupt?
I don't know when that happened.
So, I mean, like
but I mean, he's
like,
not doing movies anymore.
I know, so. But like, where's he at today? Is he, I mean, is he completely, you know, I gotta imagine you bought something cash, right? You gotta have something paid
he's
off.
He's a ghostwriter.
Right. They gotta have something paid off and he's living somewhere okay,
yeah,
right?
Well, this was an article that I read. This is new article, August 2020.
Oh shit!
Yeah, so this must have recently kind of been something that happened, but yeah, and I mean, think about it. If okay, you're worth $150 million, but you have so much debt, so much leverage, you're leveraging so much that your bills turn out to be more than what you have. So yeah. You're screwed. It really has nothing to do with how much money you have, as how much money you spend. You know,
imagine
what I
mean? If like Warren Buffett spent money like that. Yeah, like all these like conservative guys.
He's a complete opposite.
Yeah, I know exactly. Yeah. That's the thing. It's just funny to see the difference of how people spend their money.
Yeah.
On funny stories. So I have to bring this up because we talked about this. I want to say like 4 weeks ago. When did I bring up the Safari West thing?
It was like 3 or 4 episodes ago.
Right. It was a little while ago though. I brought it up. Right. Mm-hmm. And so I'm talking to Katrina about it, and I said, "Hey, did you know that Courtney went?" And because Justin brought it up, oh yeah, Courtney's been there. But you know what Justin did not share about that story?
What?
Which I always find funny when he tells stories and he leaves things out like this.
What happened? Yeah.
Do you know that she was there for a bachelorette party?
At a safari park?
At a...
What?
Well, I mean, it's lame. Why would I bring that up? Well,
because I heard that the Safari West people said that never in history have they ever had a bachelorette party there.
It's because the girl was pregnant, I believe.
And so she thought that going to
she thought that going there would be like a, I don't know.
A kid thing?
A kid.
With your kid in your belly?
Dude, I have no idea.
Hold on a second. Yeah,
don't ask me. I wasn't the one organizing it.
Hold on a second.
I just felt that was a really funny fact that was not shared about that
story. I totally
forgot
about that.
I got a few questions for you, okay?
Okay, all right.
Okay, does she have a thing for like, you know, safari guys? You know, like, or zookeepers,
who,
you know?
Courtney?
Yeah. Yeah. Is that why they picked it?
No, I think she's got more of a thing for cowboys. Yeah.
Oh,
Courtney had no decision in it. She was attending. Oh, yeah, she was attending it. It was some other girl who decided to do it. I just thought that was, you know, I don't know if you guys have friends that have done kind of
come on,
off.
Girls, let's rage and look at the giraffes. Yeah.
I had a buddy that had kind of an bachelor party, you know, that was not, like, we went to Vegas and we did nothing like Vegas, right? We did all this other stuff, like racing cars and we, you know, played cards. And we just did shit that wasn't like related to like Vegas that you would think of, but nothing like that off like where you go to a safari, which is literally the entire park has to be filled with children, you know, and you're there with a bachelorette party, a bunch of girls that want to get drunk.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I don't know what the landscape looks. I thought it was just like a winery that also had animals. You know, that's as much information as I got. So
it's literally like a children's park.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, hey. You just know,
getting
teach their own.
Getting smashed on mimosas and throwing Cheetos at the at the giraffes.
Yeah, the ostrich, you know, in the morning.
Hey, speaking of Courtney, what was you did a Q&A on your Instagram? Did you see that?
Asshole. Well, of course I saw
that. I got a message from both him and Courtney for that.
Yeah, I was like, come on, man.
You got to explain what happened.
Every time we do those things, you know, there's always somebody in there that, you know, makes like a, and it's, actually, I believe it was a guy who was flirting with me. make some
happens kind of, a lot.
Yeah, well, Justin, no, all three of us get it. I've seen all of you guys. You get the Silver Fox comment. Justin always gets like, you're the most handsome one of all of them.
You get a lot of guys though.
Yeah, I get a lot of guys that do that, right? So yeah. You were definitely the hottest one, right? That's why I got that. And so what people can't see, like when you do the Q&A, all they can see is the question. They can't see who writes the question. So I like to fuck around.
Adam gets the hungry ones. So,
yeah. I thanked.
They think they have a chance.
I thanked Courtney Andrews and I tagged her. You know,
yeah.
So
I was like, come on, dude. I don't even want her on there to begin with. And now, like, it's this flood of people over there. You know what I mean?
Are they? Oh, really? Are people? Because he tagged her, like, following?
Yeah, 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 yeah. Yeah.
I rolled Doug under the bus too. He never checks them, so I like always like messing with him too. So somebody asked me about where to get like a good deal on dumbbells or where could find some. I don't know what it was, but I posted.
Oh, you posted. Was that his real address?
No,
I was going to say.
But I'm sure hella people looked it up and was like trying to.
Well, I did get, you
we
know,
found him.
You guys are assholes, and Adam, you in particular. I did get a couple weird messages that time you wrote my phone number in the bathroom up in Tahoe.
That was me.
Yeah, was that you?
Yeah, that was me.
Oh, I felt like that was an Adam thing.
I know. It was a sneaky
you
asshole.
Jerk.
Move.
Yeah, I got a couple weird messages like, hey, like, huh? With like three Ys.
Yeah.
Like, that's a weird way to say it.
You're into anchovies and a good time.
Yeah. That's what it said. There's always weird people out there. Yeah. Anyway, there's some good news right now in the world.
What's that?
Yeah, so
that's rare.
A COVID-19 phase 3 trial is underway. Now, there's a little bit of a weird caveat to that.
It's in Russia.
The phase 3 trial is being done on the population of Russia. So that's not. Yeah. So Russia apparently
like forced on them
has a vaccine that they said, you know, this is going to work,
but no human trials yet.
But they haven't done a phase 3 type trial of it. So what they're doing is they're giving it to the public. So we're going to get the results from a very large sample of people.
Huh.
We're going to be using the vaccine to see how it plays out.
Thanks, Russian people.
You know what's here's the thing about vaccines that people need to understand. This is true. I looked this up. Because I thought, okay, what are the dangers? Because not all vaccines are the same. It's not like, I think a lot of people think that they're benign, mm-hmm. like kind of like the way our attitudes were about antibiotics for a while. I remember as a kid, antibiotics were passed out like candy because it was like no big deal. Now we know they're not all the same. Some might have some bad side effects. There may be some issues related with some of them, and you definitely don't want to abuse them. Not all vaccines are the same. I did not know this, but there were tests in the past on a SARS vaccine. SARS is also a coronavirus. It's a different type of coronavirus. And they tested it on animals, and they found that it built up antibodies. So that seems like a good thing, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Then they exposed the animals to the SARS virus, and for whatever reason, whatever the vaccine did, it basically guaranteed they died.
Oh, shit.
So then the animals got the virus, and their death rate went through the roof. This has happened with other trials of other types of vaccines.
Way to scare the shit out of everybody.
Yeah, I'm like,
well, this is why there's typically a vaccine takes 10 years of testing and stuff like that. So I'm not trying to be anti. Mm. I'm just saying, you know, you want to kind of be careful, and we do want to allow them to test all this stuff because you don't want the medicine to be worse.
Are they just testing one particular vaccine amongst the population or multiple?
The one that they approved now they're going to be giving to people. So it does sound like also the opening to a bad sci-fi.
I know, right?
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, we cured the disease. Oh, why is everybody turning into a zombie?
Half the world's zombies.
Yeah. Along those lines, some new studies came out on exercise and the immune system. This is actually pretty exciting. We've all known now for a while that being fit and healthy just gives you a stronger immune system. But it's kind of mixed as to how much of an impact it has on your immune system in terms of how many less infections, for example, would you get? Well, there was a big study that came out, and they found that adults who engaged in exercise 5 days a week had 43% fewer days with upper respiratory symptoms over a 12-week period than those who exercised no more than once a week. Another study found that adults who exercise 3 days a week were 26% less likely to have the common cold during a year-long period. Those are big numbers.
Well, the first one's obvious to me. The second one, I think, is more important, right? The fact that you would have 40% less symptoms because you in respiratory systems when you're training the respiratory system while you're
no exercising. Fewer days with symptoms. You're right. Right.
Yeah. So I mean, like that's kind of obvious, right? Your body adapts to it. You're training it while you're working out all the time. So you're of course it's going to be stronger and more resilient when that happens. I don't think we needed a study for that. But that 26%. Less people even got it is what I think is probably more important.
Yeah, well, I think this highlights the thing that a lot of us forget, which is that your 100%, your number one defense against any illness is your immune system. Mm-hmm. And I remember learning this, or really becoming aware of it, I should say, when I had a family member who was being treated for cancer. And I remember when she was under treatment, they were like, she cannot be exposed to any virus because the chemo basically destroyed her immune system for a short period of time, and something as simple as the sniffles would have turned deadly right away.
It's deadly.
In fact, they were so ready to prescribe her antibiotics at the first sign of anything because her immune system. You guys have heard of there was an old movie in the 80s. I don't remember what it was called, Bubble Boy, I think it was.
Yeah.
You guys remember that?
I remember Bubble Boy, yeah.
You remember that movie? That was about a kid whose immune system wasn't developed, so he had to live in a sterile environment constantly, and any exposure to any virus or bacteria would basically kill him, regardless of antibiotics or whatever. So we got to remember that kind of stuff, you know, stay healthy, fit, get sunlight.
Yeah, that message needs to be promoted a lot more. I just don't see that enough. Everything is so politicized now that, people just need to understand that they need to take care of themselves, take care of their body, eat, in a way that's going to benefit their body, exercise, make these a priority, because we do need to make sure that our immune system is strong and resilient.
Yeah, I feel like one of the side effects of modern medicine, which has done a great job at battling infection and has done a great job of saving people from acute illness.
Mm-hmm.
One of the side effects is we feel like that'll save me. I don't need to worry so much about being healthy, which is not the case. A person with a really strong immune system usually will do better than somebody with a bad immune system who's got access to all these medications and drugs, because that's the first line of defense.
Dude, so I brought up the other day I was watching the Major League Baseball, and so I actually watched another game. I watched the A's game versus the Astros, and then how they got in like a brawl and everything over that. But what I didn't know, which was interesting, because how they have all those cardboard cutouts in the stands and everything, was so you pay for that and you put people in place there. I guess when the ball hits. When
you get
the ball.
Oh, that's
they
cool.
send you the ball.
That's
like,
cool.
That is such a cool idea, So that way, at least there's some interaction and you get something out of
you
it.
You got to give it to these big leagues. They are getting creative with ways to I haven't been watching the NBA. I told you guys that the other day that I stopped watching it, but I have seen stuff on news. And the Phoenix Suns did this really cool. So the players come out before every game. You announce the starting lineup. Oh, you're starting point guard 6'3", blah blah blah. They come out, right. That's normally how basketball starts.
Mm-hmm.
What they did was they had recorded, because they're all in Florida having to do this so they're away from their families. They actually had the families announce their kids and their siblings and their families announce them for the game. So on the big screen and on the TV.
Oh, that's nice.
When the players came, and the players didn't know, right? So when they come out, like, they are all emotional and stuff like that because they haven't seen their kids and stuff, and then they get to see them announce him. I thought that was really clever and original. Like, you see a lot that's happening right now. I think they're trying to find ways.
Yeah, there's little bits of drama and little cool things that they're adding. Like, so the other thing was, you remember, so baseball is very ritualistic and has like lots of like curses and things and so there's been a lot of petty stuff that people have done already. Like so in Chicago at Wrigley, when they're going in playoffs, I don't know if you guys remember about Bartman and the guy that so most people that watch sports know about that. And so basically, I don't know if it was the Florida Marlins again, like somebody, a fan of theirs, put Bartman, the cardboard cutout in Wrigley.
Oh, that's so great.
Like, dude.
So, because you could buy, I could buy a seat, right? So that's how this works. And then it's a cardboard cutout of whatever I want. So I heard they were doing that.
They did it with Weekend of Bernie's.
Yeah, I saw that.
They did that with Weekend. Remember the Weekend of Bernie's?
Yeah.
It was behind the plate, home plate or whatever.
Yeah.
And I feel like,
Pretty funny.
So the ratings are still not good. I've been kind of paying attention to that. And the ratings aren't good. However, after I've seen these pictures and memes of, like, you know, Weekend at Bernie's back there or whatever, I feel like the fans might actually save the ratings, because
I don't know,
that's going to become a thing.
It's clever.
Where it people is. Are going to look in the audience
Well, just like Justin said, I mean, that's a big deal. Like, in Wrigley Field, like, the whole Bartman curse is a huge fucking deal.
So I don't know what that is.
Okay, so there's a guy like that reached over and caught a ball instead of allowing it to play.
I know.
And he was a Cubs fan, which is the worst part.
Yes. And they ended up losing, right, because of that. And so that was a big –
rallied five runs that inning, I believe. Yeah, after that. Like, they were – it was the third out. It was like they were able to get, like, out of the inning, and he ruined it because he reached out and prevented him from catching it.
You know what's the interesting thing about superstitions is that they're real if you believe in them.
Right.
They're not real if you don't.
Right.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So if you've got,
like,
the wrong
coincidence or
That's why it's so great, because there's not a Cubs fan one that doesn't believe that and thinks it's a major curse. And then you have now if you're a rival team. So if I'm a Marlins fan, we're coming into Wrigley Field, it's a hilarious thing for me to make a cutout of that guy and put it in the stands.
Because
it's going to piss off all the hilarious.
I mean, it's like if you have the wrong socks on, you're not going to play well, and you believe that, and then you have the wrong socks on, you're not going to play well.
Dude, so much of sports, though, I mean, it's in the psychology. That's why you have sports psychologists is now like a profession that, like, athletes at the top level, they really have to invest in their mind, like, in making sure their mindset is right going in.
My favorite stories are the ones where, and I don't think this happens anymore, but this was like in the 70s and 80s when pitchers or players would show up and play, like, on a lot of drugs. There was that one
Daryl Strawberry.
You think that doesn't happen still today?
You think it still happens?
Of course it still happens,
dude,
bro.
Dude, lines of blow.
Yeah, the drugs are just different. They're better, you know what I'm saying? back then they're experimenting with stuff, you know what I'm saying? Like, let's try this and see if I can play on coke and see how I do, you know?
Who was that one player that pitched a no-hitter, but like hella acid? He was on hella acid.
Is Goodwin, right? Doc Goodwin? Is that what it is? I think that's who's famous for being like...
He's like the Yankees or the Mets, right? Yeah. I just remember the Mets were just riddled with, like, drug use.
You could even put famous pitcher on drugs. Acid. Yeah, I think it was Doc Goodwin. Is it? I feel bad if it's not.
Ellis.
Oh, Ellis. Sorry.
Look at that.
Played for Pittsburgh.
He went through a no-hitter despite being high on a kite on acid.
Acid?
Yeah.
How do you play on acid? That's crazy.
He got on. I guess he was partying, and then he got on a plane because he didn't realize he had a game. Uh-huh. and then he had to get on a plane, and an hour later,
My theory on, like, drugs and stuff like that in professional sports is that, and we think because we're in the fitness space, and so we're aware of, like, you know, the latest nootropic that's out. I think professional sports is 5 years to 10 years ahead of us.
Yeah.
I mean, you're talking about millions and millions of dollars for athletes. You want to talk about where the cutting edge science is going for drugs.
Are you really trying to
have the limitless drug?
Are you trying to make a case for being on hella acid to play a sport?
No, I'm just what I'm saying is that it not only has it been happening since then. I don't think you were alluding that it used to be like that. I think it's no different. If anything, it's more tested, and they're aware of, like, what's the new cutting edge shit, and they know how to
hide it in their PTs.
Yeah, yeah, no, there's way more.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, if you're making, you know, if you've got a contract worth $100 million and you're worth that much money to the team, I wouldn't be surprised if you have some special doctor and scientist that hook you up with your special formula before you.
Of course.
It reminds me of, like most things do, Rocky IV with the Russian when they're hooking him up with the machines.
Yeah.
look at Lance Armstrong.
Everything relates to a Rocky.
Levels, yeah.
You brought up socks, and Sal, you said something about socks, and it reminded me of Justin. I think it was Justin who turned us on to the Netflix series, The Love on the Spectrum.
So good.
It was really good. I watched
so
the whole
good.
Did you guys
I'm glad
watch
you guys
the whole thing?
Watched it.
Yes.
I watched the whole thing too.
I loved it.
It's literally the most endearing thing.
It was really good.
Yeah, if you want to actually feel good, because the world is not providing any positive things. Like, that's such a positive show.
Oh, yeah. These are people who obviously are on the spectrum of autism, and they're so honest. Yeah. They can't really be fake, and then they have their own anxieties and their own quirks.
Right.
They're so likable.
Yeah.
I don't remember the one dude's name. The one guy, he's got like...
They're all like from Australia, I think, for the most part.
Or yeah, I think they were in Australia. There was the one dude, he's got like a big family, and he's really funny on accident. Yeah. You know, he'll say, but super straight face.
Yeah, that was one of my favorite guy.
Yeah. Oh, he made me... and then that one girl who jumped a lot when she got really excited or whatever.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. Did you guys just want to hug them?
Yeah no, it was, I wasn't, when Justin first brought it up, I wasn't sure what it was supposed to be like.
I was afraid that it would have been one of those things where you're laughing.
Dating shows.
Or where you're laughing at them, which would have made me really mad.
No.
You know?
Yeah, I wouldn't promote that.
It was not like that. It's very endearing. You feel a lot of you just love them. They're so likable and you want to see them make it. And then that one couple that was already together and super in love.
Yeah.
And they're just both.
He was so good to her. Like, oh. Doing all those things for. Yeah,
I also was telling Katrina, like, what a rewarding job to be that lady.
I know.
What a cool job. Like, you help all of these. Like, because really all it is just they lack the social skills. Brilliant in other things, right? Brilliant minds in other aspects of their life. They lack the social skills, but it doesn't mean they can't be taught that. It doesn't mean like it's gone and they don't ever get it. It's just they're at a lower level than most people at their age, but you can totally expand on it and you can watch how she's helping them piece it together.
Oh,
and you see how tough it's been on their parents.
That
was the one I was like, oh, that hit me. Because you just imagine like how much work they've had to, you know, put into this to try and get them at least so they could be social enough to interact, you know, in the real world and like, you know, make their own living and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's the part that really got to me because obviously I'm a father and you guys are not, you know, you and Adam, you're a new dad and you know what a parent's love is like.
Mm-hmm.
So to watch the parents talk about their kids and be so happy and the fathers get emotional a couple times talking about how far their kids have come.
Yeah.
It hits you right in the heart because you know you would go through fire.
Well, we have a mutual friend that has a son that's autistic, and every time he talks about the whole, I mean, it's completely changed his life. I mean, for the good too. I mean, it's made him a better man just having to deal with it. And I always get emotional listening to him talk about like what he's going through to try and figure.
Some of the best people I've ever known were parents who had challenging circumstances with their children because I think. That love for your child, which is probably one of the most powerful feelings you could have ever, pushes you to be the best person you can in the face of that kind of challenge.
All your priorities are in the right place.
Absolutely. And so so watching that and hearing them talk, I'm sitting there, I'm like, I mean, Jessica and I are watching, I'm like, am I going to cry?
Yeah, trying to cry.
Yeah.
So I have a cool announcement. I think we've alluded to this the last month and a half or so that we were bringing on some new partners. I believe this is the last one to introduce right now. That I'm really excited about. One of the spaces that always I'm looking for is natural ways to help improve sleep. We talk about sleep all the time. We just had an episode where we talked about all the different steps to improve that and the importance of sleep and how overrated or underrated it is and how many people don't pay attention to that, how long it took us to piece that together as trainers. And then, of course, we're also not fans of using things to get better sleep or using drugs or stuff like that to help that, like the natural way for you to get better rest at night. We know that the Blue Blockers have been one of the great partners for that. And then now we have a new one that we're introducing, and that's Pluto Pillow, which was really cool. I got a chance to, you know, like we talk about always, anytime we have a new partner, we court them for a while. I got a chance to meet the CEO. We talked for a long old time. When I first talked to her, you know, she told me her story and what inspired her to actually do this. And I guess I never really thought about this. I think every time I've ever bought a pillow, it just happens to be when I'm buying like a comforter or a bed set.
Yeah, right.
I just get it.
Like, how's it feel? Is it good?
Yeah. Or they literally just like throw it. Yeah, here you go or whatever. But she's like, have you ever shopped online for a pillow? And I was like, no. She's like, and she like waited for me. Get online. Go try and do it real quick. And so I get online and sure as shit, it's like you get like 3,000 like options. Yeah. And there's just not a lot of detail to them. You know, it's all around branding. Like if you know, like the brand of the pillow, that's it. But as far as what's this pillow going to feel like, and it's online, you're completely clueless to what the experience might be. And then a lot of times people buy them and it's just like, whatever. So you're reading through reviews to try and figure it out.
Right.
She goes, so the process is just so laborious and it's terrible. And that, she goes, I thought there was a huge opportunity to make the buying experience online much better, smoother, and easier for the client. And
well,
so that's
the part of it that's interesting to me. So I'll come from a fitness perspective because that's my expertise, right? You can follow workouts that are really well written and done, and they'll be good. They'll be effective, but nothing will ever surpass an individualized workout, one that is designed specifically for your body, your lifestyle, your motivation levels, your fitness history. Like, nothing's ever going to beat that. It's impossible because it's individualized. The Pluto pillows are literally individualized to you, and I don't know of any other company that does this. So you go on their website and you enter in things like your height, your weight, does your head get hot or cold, the pillow that you currently use, is it too hard for you, too soft for you, how tall is it? Like, all these, there's all these different questions, and then they literally design and individualize a pillow for you, and that obviously is going to make a huge difference.
Yeah, then ship it directly to your house.
And then you get, and so Jessica did the whole process for me, and then I got the pillow, and I'm like, well, let's see what happens, you know, and huge difference.
Yeah, I started sleeping on my, the biggest thing for me was that, like, my head gets really hot. And so, like, if I have the wrong type of pillow, like, it'll
There was a joke there, Doug, I know.
Was it?
Oh, yeah, I left it. He's
like joke Tourette's right there. My head does get hot. It's a real thing.
The engine is working hard in there.
Yeah, you know, always. Just moving, you know, gears. At night, that wakes me up. I have to, like, I have the window open, like, everything else to try and make everything cool, but then still my pillow, like, just radiates with heat. So that was something that I've noticed, and this is kind of a selling point on their end, is that the whatever, you know, type of materials they use has really helped kind of cool it down a bit.
Totally. Speaking of heat, you know, obviously Jessica's in her third trimester of pregnancy. She has turned into a like a heat generating furnace.
Yeah.
Like, now before she got pregnant, Jessica needed, the house had to be, this is not exaggeration, between 73 and 74 degrees. That's how, and she liked to sleep that way.
Oh,
okay. Yeah. She was always cold or whatever.
It's like the jungle.
Oh, now, like, AC is at 65, no sheets, don't touch me. Like, she's like, I put my hand on her, just like my little hand on her back. Just, oh, I just want to feel, oh, get your hand
she's
off.
She's turned into me and Adam.
Oh, yeah. Dude. And I feel heat coming off her body. We had dinner with my parents the other day, and we were sitting outside, and we're under a patio, and fans and all that, and she lasted about 25 minutes. So I gotta go inside and sit down, just sweating.
I remember when Katrina made that transition too, because that's obviously the battle in my house too, right? As I'm always trying to cool it down, she's always trying to keep it in the 70s, and that was like the only thing I could say that was my favorite part of the third trimester. Was right. That, right?
Yeah.
Everything else.
Hey, we're finally on the same climate.
Yeah, exactly. We finally got on the same page where she was like, "Oh my God, it's so hot in here." I'm like, "Jesus, you're hot. I'm actually a little cold. This is nice."
Oh, and then of course, and then just by part, I feel bad about this. She literally has to go pee every hour. Yeah. Every single hour, and then
there's no room in there.
Oh, dude, she go and the baby's like kicking the her bladder.
Yeah.
Like, she went pee. We went for a walk. You know, we go for 10 minutes. She's like, I have to pee really bad. We got to go back. Got to walk back. Go pee. I'm like, babe, why don't we just put a diaper on you? Because otherwise, we're not gonna be able to do the walk.
We mean, can't so do the logical, walk. Right?
Yeah.
You know
what not to say to your pregnant
exactly
wife.
Exactly what she wants to hear.
And then she got all sensitive.
Weird.
I'm just kidding.
I mean, they have lace ones now, right?
Yeah. No, I feel we could get into this, babe. I'll wear one too.
Oh God.
I'm just kidding. Oh, anyway,
I don't want to hear about that.
Adam, your really short shorts are showing off your really long legs. Justin, you've got really short legs. I just noticed too.
What do you mean I got short legs?
I don't think you got long legs. I think you got.
I got like proportional legs.
Do you really?
Yeah, with amazing calves.
No, I feel like you got like kind of shorter legs. You know what I mean? Which gives you good strength.
Maybe. I feel like it's pretty balanced. It
gives you a solid base.
Okay.
Or whatever. Anyway.
I'm glad.
Speaking of which,
you're noticing this.
Speaking of which, I just set up a transition.
Yeah.
So Viori is now making the inseams on their pants for women. It gets longer because women do.
This was your commercial transition.
That's it, right there.
That was terrible.
That was my best attempt.
No, yeah.
Long legs, short legs, longer pant seams in the Fury pants.
They, I know that, so I'm always rocking their Banks and then their, what are the other shorts that I really like?
Core.
Core Banks and Core shorts are my favorite.
Didn't you say you were going to get like the rip proof pants or whatever?
Rip stop? Yeah. Well, the rip stop pants, because ironically, right? Like, so I had a pair before, they're khaki and they're great because I love having at least one pair of khaki pants, and I totally shredded like from the crotch down to my knee, a big old hole. And so thankfully though, they take them back and then they replace them, so I didn't even have to like.
I love that about them. They definitely, and I don't know who else does this online, like direct to consumer stuff. I imagine that it's more challenging to do that.
A lifetime guarantee.
Yeah, so they're like Nordstrom's. You know, Nordstrom's is like that's what they were known for, right? Like if you something, you've had it for 2 months. Button falls off, and then you walk into Nordstrom's, no receipt, no nothing. Give it to them, and then
I bet you always just shopped at Nordstrom's.
I did a little bit, yeah.
Do you use Grey Poupon mustard too?
No, stupid guys. You are not allowed to make fun of fashion stuff.
No, I'm just saying.
Captain Target, I'm just saying. Kmart over here.
Yeah, guy. Feels good, looks good. What are you going to do?
Kmart sucks.
You're like, no, like Nicolas Cage over there.
definitely sucks. Oh my God, no way, dude. That's crazy. I don't even know how something like that happens, because you have to be a moron and not understand like how property tax works to not like start to do the math. Like you buy, I mean, that's one of the bummers about even living in California. You buy a, you know, maybe you make enough money and you can finally afford a multi-million dollar house. Well, that's great. Like you, whatever you did to get to that point, but you got to be able to, the property taxes on a multi-million dollar house in California, you're paying, you know, $2,000-$3,000 a month, which is like more than like a lot of people's mortgages in the rest of the country that you have to pay every single month. So you go out and buy multiple, you know, $10 million properties. You got to be a moron to think that even if you're doing movies all the time, you have to think that like that can never stop if you buy that many properties.
It just goes to show that if you don't have good financial, a good relationship with money, good financial health, that giving someone more money isn't going to solve the problem. It's just like the question that we get all the time whenever we post our Qua meme on Instagram. A real common question is, how would you feel if they invented a pill that you could take that would just make you lean and fit? And my answer to that is you'd have the physical effects of it, but you would still have not developed the skills to have a good relationship with your body, with fitness and with health. One of the side effects of working out and eating right is you look lean and all that stuff, but there's so many effects that you have from developing that healthy relationship. So you could give somebody who has a shitty relationship with food and exercise a pill to make them fit. You would solve one problem out of 1,000 those poor relationships create. It's no different than like the story about Nicolas Cage.
Well, yeah, I mean the lottery winners and Biggest Loser to me are the best examples of that.
Yeah.
You know, because we've had enough lottery winners to go back and look at the stats on that. We've had enough people go through Biggest Loser, and the bankruptcy and poor rate of people that win the lottery is ridiculous. Mm. I believe it's up in the 80%.
They're buying boats and nonsense.
Just because I mean there's a lot that happens. Getting to a place where you even reach $1 million, there's a lot of things that you have to learn along the way about that in order to keep that kind of money. And if you just get to be at the top of the mountain, like your analogy you like to give, and it's totally different. You didn't put in all the work to get to climb the mountain, and the behaviors.
You just helicoptered up there.
Yeah, the behaviors and the habits that it takes to make that kind of money and to keep that kind of money. So you go right through it. And the same thing goes for the person who's trying to lose weight. Like, yeah, you can put these 10 obese people in this, 3-month boot camp where they don't get, they're not in real life, and hammer the shit out of them, starve their body. And of course they'll lose a ton of weight, but that's not real life. That's not how it works. And so if they didn't put in the practice to do that. And I believe like the stats on like that, where there's still like a 20% success rate. I don't even know how they factor that in, because is that forever, or is that just for the next 3 years? Because some people have the resiliency and the discipline, or they've gone out and they bought a personal trainer to keep them going, like some of these Biggest Loser people. I would bet you that in 10 years from now, almost all of them, if not all of them, are back to the same.
Those are skills that take time to develop. They're difficult. They're possible, though. But if you don't develop those skills, you're not going to be in a good situation. Even if you're gifted all the results that you think are all of the value that you get from developing those skills. It reminds me, there was a, I don't remember who it was, it might have been Bill Gates, a billionaire, where he went to lunch with a reporter. And when he went to tip, he gave the guy a $20 tip or something like that. And the reporter said something to him, like, was kind of poking at him and said, "You know, I went to dinner with your son, and your son gave the guy like a $200 tip. Why is that?" And he says, "Because I'm a self-made billionaire, and my son is the son of a billionaire." In other words, I develop the skills right. that it takes to build wealth. My son just has this wealth. And so he doesn't have any of those skills. And this is true. When you meet those shitty, you know, wealthy people that act like crap, oftentimes they're not the ones that earned it. They're the yeah. ones that inherited it or
it's been passed on.
Exactly. Yeah. You ever meet someone who's self-made and you tend to meet someone that's got some really good.
They're pretty responsible.
Yeah. And they've got really good financial health and good habits in other parts of their life. Just like if you meet someone who has a really good lifelong relationship with fitness and nutrition, it requires so much discipline and so much skill that it bleeds into other things. I think the same thing is true about, you know, building a business.
I agree.
Today's Quad is brought to you by MAPS Anabolic. If you're looking to maximize your overall muscle and strength, MAPS Anabolic is the perfect place to start. With a full 30-day money-back guarantee, there is absolutely zero risk. So what are you waiting for? Go to mindpromedia.com and get started today.
It's the motherfucking Quad.
The eagle has landed.
Quee-qua.
Our first question is from Grant Satterthwaite. How would you recommend programming isometrics and dynamic tension for strength?
Probably one of the most underrated, undervalued
yes.
Exercise techniques in resistance training. The benefit and the value that you get from training and utilizing isometrics or dynamic tension is they're well documented. We have decades of studies mm-hmm. on high-level athletes, Olympic lifters, power lifters now start to utilize some of the stuff. The value with this type of training is tremendous, super, super undervalued. I almost never see anybody program this in their workouts, and that's too bad.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like I never saw it. I never saw it in the gym. I never saw anybody utilizing it until I got into college and was around some strength conditioning coaches that were using this with athletics and you know ways to improve very specific mechanics with their athletes and to do that in a way that wasn't as damaging as you know powerlifting and some certain things like that where you know they were like. They're really trying to hone in on developing and building and strength in that specific skill. And so it's very much an underutilized method that's out there that we tried our best to kind of incorporate them in some of our MAPS programs, mainly because I just don't think people have been exposed to them and the benefits of them.
I used it a lot as a trainer. Did you guys use it a lot? I used it a lot as a trainer.
I did, and I used it more as a correctional
towards the end of my
okay, method, yeah. but I you know, the performance aspect, I also underrated, and I'm just too bad at yes. it.
So I agree. So that's how I did not use it the way we've programmed it in some of the programs.
MAPS performance, that's why we put it in there.
Right. Yeah. No, it's phenomenal in there, and that is not the way that I used to use it. How I used to love to use it as a trainer was as a way to teach a good form and technique.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Like, so one of the hardest things is when you, and we've kind of like talked about this a little bit where, you know, if I got a client and they had an athletic background, I could always tell, and Justin talks about like this too, like how that was like the easy client for him and he really struggled with the opposite side, right? Mm-hmm. And so did I think a lot of trainers do. Like, you know, when you've been training for a long time and you've got good form and technique, and then if you've trained athletes, they pick things up really quick. Then all of a sudden you get a person who's been an engineer for 30 years of his life, never lifted a weight ever, and you got to train them. And it is so foreign that it's like you could demo the exercise slow and 100 times and they just do not have the communication there. It's just not there, the body awareness. And so getting them to perform an exercise correctly, I would have to like break it in segments.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and so I'll use like a bicep curl because it's so basic for people to visualize. But I mean, I would take somebody and I would like, here's your starting posture. I'd have them holding dumbbells or something, right? And then I would manually grab their shoulders, put them into place, pin their elbows by their side, and then I'd say, okay, now I let them bring it up like 6 inches, and then hold it there. Yeah. Now hold that position. Then I'd go back and correct, because right away their shoulders would collapse forward, mm-hmm. elbow would rock forward. I'd bring the elbows back. I'd pull the and they'd be holding that position, and I'd want them. And then I want them to feel like that's where you need to be. Now bring it up again, and then I bring them up a little bit, another 6 more inches. Have to go kind of adjust their body again, and I used it like that a lot. To get somebody who has really bad body awareness and doesn't have good form and technique to coach them through that, like literally inch by inch. And that was like, I would say the single best thing I did for helping clients that did not have that athletic background or did not have a weight training background, that exercise was so foreign to them, to get them to get the movement down.
Yeah, similar, but more on the performance end of it. Like, so I would look at sticking points, and I know a lot of powerlifters and people that are like actually competing and lifting weights, they've actually broken it into segments like you're talking about in terms of where those sticking points might lie. So for a squat, you know, that bottom portion is you know, usually the, you know, the most difficult, the most challenging amount to be able to summon enough force to be able to drive everything back up with the weight. So I would actually have them stay in that position and really like connect to it and squeeze. And you know, like, it's amazing how much more you can recruit by just like literally focusing on squeezing harder and training your body to give you and provide you more force in that susceptible position.
Now, do we explain the difference between isometrics and dynamic tension?
No. So you, there's different ways to strengthen these types of training, you know, positions. One is to push against an immovable object. So it would be like I'm underneath a bench press. The weight, let's say, rather than having weight on the bar, I push the weight up against the safeties. So the bar is up against the safeties. I'm not going to lift the whole cage, and I just push into that, for example.
Right, you're not moving at all.
You're not moving it, but you are pushing hard against an immovable object or the wall or something like that, right? The other way is to create tension intrinsically, mm-hmm. which would be like just pretending to push against something real hard, but flexing all my muscles and creating a lot of tension. Now, here's the things you need to understand about these techniques. They build muscle and they build strength. And the way they do it, first off, they build muscle in similar ways to other forms of resistance training where you're creating damage, you're sending a muscle building signal, all that stuff. But there's this other unique thing about these types of training that they're better at than almost any other form of resistance training. They are excellent at increasing the outage, increasing the juice that the central nervous system can send mm-hmm. to muscles, the connection. So think about it this way, right? Imagine you have a laptop, and the laptop it has a wire connecting to a big robot. And you give the robot commands with the computer, and you tell the robot to lift something heavy or whatever. The problem is the robot's the communication is limited by the skinny little, you know, USB wire that I have attached to the robot. Now, I could attach really fat cables that allow more juice, more power, better communication to go to the robot, in which case the robot performs better. This is not unlike your body. Your muscles don't just act on their own. They act because the central nervous system communicates to them. You literally send a command to these muscles. This is why somebody who, let's say, has been bedridden for a long time or in a coma doesn't just jump out of bed mm-hmm. and is able to walk. Besides the fact that the muscles themselves are weak and atrophied, they have like no more connection to the muscle. Or someone who got a stroke, for example, where they have to relearn how to move and walk. So those are extreme examples. But isometric and dynamic tension increases the power. So when you can increase the power, you get now a louder muscle building signal. You lift heavier weight. It's under better control. You feel stronger. And look, Bruce Lee was a huge fan of it. This is when I really first started paying attention to it. I remember reading about Bruce Lee's workouts, and he wasn't particularly strong in traditional sense. Like, he couldn't bench press a ton of weight, but he could do crazy things like hold a 100-pound dumbbell at arm's length for long periods of time with just incredible tension.
And just generate power like with 1-inch punch kind of thing.
He was well known for having this incredible power and rigidity in his wrists and his arms when you would punch or in his ankles and feet when you
would kick. So to the dynamic tension, like if you think of it too as just creating more tension through these types of movements. So if I'm doing a push-up and I'm also then, you know, actively trying to turn my hands out, even though they're not moving anywhere, but I'm focusing on different areas that I can increase the tension of muscles to recruit more of a louder signal. So that way, you know, when you start to really like manipulate that and create more tension, the tension provides more security around the joints. Mm. And so now this command gets louder as a result because everything is telling the body that we're secure, we're, you know, we're stable, we're able to now apply even more force. So that way, you know, you actually get stronger overall.
Yes. And there's a few ways you can implement this. By the way, the athletes that inadvertently on accident utilized tension movements are bodybuilders, believe it or not, just through flexing and posing. You know, Arnold used to talk about as he'd get up to a competition, he would practice posing 3 times a day, and he noticed it sharpened and hardened his muscles. What was probably happening, aside from getting leaner, was that his muscle, he was able to control them better. But in terms of programming, there's a few different ways you could do it. You either can start your workout out with these types of techniques, which give you better connection to the exercises when you get into them.
That's where I like to use it.
That's how you. I like to use it that way also. The bodybuilder method, they tend to do it at the end or in between sets. So you're doing your traditional workout. Let's say you just finished working out your legs. Now at the end of your workout, you're doing the squeeze and you're focusing on tension and isometrics. I've done both. I think both have their value. The one I prefer is what, like when you just said, Adam, I like to do it at the beginning of the workout. I just feel stronger in all my lifts.
You know, this conversation reminds me, I've been meaning to shout out our buddy across the pond, Coach Eugene Tao. He, when the whole COVID thing hit, he was one of the few trainers that I saw do this.
I saw him do that, yeah.
And I love when I see coaches that think this way. I mean, I think you saw all over social media when, you know, COVID hit, everybody's home.
Everybody's lifting their couch.
Yes, you saw all the creative, stupid exercises come out. You know, the soup can stuff, lifting the couches and doing weird shit. And just, and to me, that's all the simple-minded trainers went that direction.
Yeah, curl your dog. You know?
Yeah, whatever. You know, for whatever reasons, whether you're just getting it for doing it for likes or you really think this is a good way to teach clients. And he went all this direction. Almost every day I saw a different exercise that he was sharing, and like all he would use is like a towel or a t-shirt or something, and he'd show people how to get a great back workout, leg workout through isometrics and using just a towel or a t-shirt. And to me, that's just a sign of a really smart coach that understands the value of something like that. And here's a great opportunity for people to knowing that a lot of people probably don't utilize it. And here you are limited because you don't have a gym. Now's a great time to implement this into your routine.
These techniques are some of the unsung heroes in mass performance. When we get comments and reviews, this is a lot of times what people comment on and say, I did not realize how big of an impact this would have. We don't talk about it a whole lot. I think we forget about it. But it's extremely valuable. So in terms of programming, beginning or end of your workout, and you should be totally fine. That doesn't add too much in terms of damage to muscles. Can you overdo it? Of course, you can overdo everything. But I would say, you know, a couple sets at the beginning of your workout would probably just give you benefit and not really any detriment.
Next question is from Wayne W. 1980. Why do processed foods add so much water between the skin and muscle for days after? What foods or supplements can reduce water retention after a holiday or cheat weekend?
It's the sodium and carbs.
Yeah. Oh, totally. I'll leave the second part of that question for you, Adam. You're probably the most well-versed on getting water out from under the skin. This is a total bodybuilder skill. I think they're the experts of the fitness world on that particular part. But the reason why you may hold water with processed food, this was a great conversation I would have with clients. You know, when they would ask me about nutrition, inevitably, the sodium question would come up. You know, I need to reduce my sodium. Should I be salting my food? Should I not be salting my food? And I would say to them, and this is true, I'd say for most people, if you avoid heavily processed food, go ahead and salt the shit out of your whole foods and you'll eat fine. Your sodium intake will be just fine.
Yeah.
People do not realize how much sodium is contained in processed foods.
Yeah.
I eat very little.
It's buried in there.
I eat very little processed foods. In fact, I almost no processed foods. But when I eat my whole natural foods, my steak, my vegetables, my potatoes, my rice.
Sal carries salt in his purse everywhere he goes.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Everywhere he goes.
I don't have a purse.
It's a purse.
Yeah. Yeah. Everywhere we go, he literally pulls it out and he salts food wherever, whatever we're eating. So, but that's just it. I used to tell the clients the same thing. If you're eating Whole Foods, season and salt all you want, because
it's hard to eat too much salt when you're doing it.
Well,
that way.
I saw a really good comparison one time. Maybe Doug can find it online, but they showed like, you know, one meal of eating at McDonald's or eating out somewhere, the amount of sodium that you intake, like you couldn't pour enough table salt on your food like in a week's time to like account for like one meal of eating out. It's that crazy of a difference. So yeah, if you are eating processed foods, and you're going to get a tremendous amount of sodium. Now, sodium isn't necessarily something bad for you though. It's okay, but you need to understand that if you on an average day, let's say for the most part, you eat whole foods pretty regularly, and then every once in a while, you enjoy yourself. You go have a big old pizza, or you order Five Guys or In-N-Out, and you go to town. Well, what you need to realize is that one meal, if you are somebody who eats whole foods most of the time, even seasoning and salting, and then you have that one meal out of nowhere, and this happens to me because I, like Sal, eat mostly whole foods, but I do have processed foods in my diet for sure. And I always know right afterwards, the next 48 to 72 hours, my body holds on to more water. And yep. It takes about that long. So I always tell clients that are asking questions around this to really take a snapshot of about 48 to 72 hours. Don't allow a day of eating that might have been inconsistent for you, meaning you probably ate processed foods or something like that out of the ordinary, to affect what our plan is, like what we're doing macro-wise, what we're doing exercise-wise, because there's a very good chance your body's holding on to additional water for the next 48 to 72 hours. That's what it'll naturally take to kind of pull that out, and then look at after 3 days and tell me if you still feel the same way you felt after that night of pizza. So that's the first bit of advice. And so here's things they take into consideration. One, eating out, they normally grossly undercalculate what the calories are. They're allowed, FDA allows them a good, I think, 20 to 30% to be off. So a lot of times the food that's what it says it is, it's much higher in carbohydrates, calories, and possibly sodium in there. So you got to factor that in. And for every 3 grams of carbohydrates that you intake, your body holds 3 ounces of water. So if you eat out a processed food, there's a good chance it has more carbs and calories than you expected. There's a good chance it has more sodium than you expected. And then in addition to that, your body's naturally going to hold on to more water. So, and that could be for, depending on the person, on how much water and how big you are, that could be anywhere from 2 to 9 pounds of water that your body can hold on. Like when I was up in the 240 range and drinking a gallon to 2 gallons of water every day, my weight would fluctuate 9 pounds through the night, based off of what I was doing with carbohydrates, sodium, and water. So you have to take that into consideration. A natural way to pull water would be the next 2 days after you had that high sodium day is to pay attention to your sodium intake, have it a little bit lower, pay attention to your carbohydrate intake, have it a little bit lower, and then asparagus. Asparagus has something in it, I can't remember what it is, that helps naturally pull water out. So that was like a natural way to do it. And that is what I would recommend. I would not recommend any extreme things. I wouldn't say for you to cut drinking water. I wouldn't tell you to cut sodium completely out. I wouldn't tell you to cut carbohydrates. And I wouldn't tell you to go take water pills just to pull it out. You could go sweat in a sauna. That'll help out. So sweating in a sauna, eating asparagus, and reducing the carbohydrate and the sodium intake from what the processed food day, those things are. And then also being easy on yourself, recognizing that it may take 2 to 3 days for it to kind of completely
move. Well, so I pulled up some interesting statistics here, okay? So just to give people an example of the amount of salt that's in things that you wouldn't even realize, instant plain oatmeal. But does anybody ever think instant plain oatmeal has salt in it?
You think of
oats. Yeah, it's 400 to 500 milligrams of sodium in instant oatmeal, something that you would think has no salt at all. Another statistic that I pulled up was that most people get 77% of their daily sodium in processed foods. That's where it all comes from. So
is that just to up the shelf life for the most part for those products?
It's the taste. It's processed.
Yeah, taste and shelf life.
Yeah, it is. And so it's like, you know, I salt the hell out of my food, but it's all whole natural food. I guarantee you my sodium intake is perfectly fine within the range that they'll give you for healthy. But I know when I eat processed food – I know I feel it. I can feel it. I get the bloat, and then I get really thirsty. This is when I wake up in the middle of the night and need to drink a glass of water. Oh, yeah. That's really strange.
This reminds me, too, of annoying conversations I used to have with clients that went to the doctor, and then the doctor told them they couldn't salt food and shit.
What a dumb piece of advice.
I used to hate that. Like,
you're going
to
reduce your sodium barely by doing that.
I know. And it's like, that is not where the problem is. It lies in your Mickey D's you had last night or the, you know, extra large pizza.
Deep dish pizza.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? That's where the problem
or
lies.
Or even the can of soup or the pasta sauce that came out of the jar or, you know, stuff like that you wouldn't even realize.
Yeah.
You know, that even things you don't think are salty, they add a ton of sodium to processed foods. If it's natural, you're fine. Go for it.
No.
Next question is from Benelux Ryder. What are your thoughts on intra-workout carbs? Are they really necessary if pre- and post-nutrition is well planned out?
I think it's funny.
Yeah. So intra workout carbs.
You just got marketed to.
Yeah. Is like drinking like a sports drink or, you know, carbohydrates while you're training. Studies show that there is a benefit for people who are working out for long periods of time.
Yeah. Like, so if, rigorously.
Yeah. So if you're like, you know, you're doing like a 2 hour, 3 hour, 4 hour like session where you're hiking like crazy, kayaking, you know, running, or you're doing a really, really long, drawn out session, then it makes sense to have carbohydrates because then your body can use those to replenish glycogen stores to give you more of that energy.
It's such a splitting hairs conversation
for most people. For everybody,
even who the example you just gave, it's still splitting hairs. It really is. I mean, and here's the deal: like, because my peers when competing did stuff like this. And you know what? Hey, if you are, you know, you're tracking sleep, you're measuring, you're weighing your food, you're weighing yourself, you're tracking your ounces of water every day, your sodium intake, like you are like dialed on every aspect of training and eating. Like, okay, sure, play with that. You know, you can do that. But I mean, I can tell you from my experience personally, I mean, I worked my way all the way up to a professional bodybuilder without worrying about that stuff, without worrying about the timing of my meal post-workout, without doing any sort of an intro workout carbohydrate. Like, none of that stuff is going to make a big difference. And I'm talking on that level. Even on that level, it is still splitting hairs. For the average person, is it worth it?
It's
a waste of time.
For endurance athletes who are doing long bouts of endurance, there is benefit.
Sure, yeah. You're a marathon runner, you're an OC racer, and you're pushing, you know, two-hour long runs and with exercise or doing it multiple times a day.
Then it makes a difference.
Sure.
And studies support that. But I will say this, and here's the reason why it makes a difference, okay? When you're an athlete and you're going to go do a marathon or go do a 3 or 4 hour mountain bike ride or whatever, your body only has the capacity to store something like 6,000 to 8,000 calories worth of carbohydrates in liver and in muscle. And for high performing athletes doing these long duration,
you could burn all that.
You could burn it all out and you're gone and you hit the wall and then you're screwed. There is another option. The other option is to be keto adapted, go into these endurance sessions that require low to moderate levels of exertion for long, long periods of time.
Right.
Because even a lean athlete will have something like 30,000 to 40,000 calories worth of fat that they can use and convert into ketones.
Not really something to consider if you're an explosive athlete.
Not if you're explosive, but if you're like a long distance runner or you're going to go. I remember when I was.
Zach Bitter did this.
I remember when I was keto adapted, both Jessica and I were keto adapted, and I never kayak. I'm not an endurance athlete. I lift weights, but we went kayaking in Lake Tahoe. We were supposed to find this campsite, got totally lost. Ended up kayaking for, I don't remember what it was, like 5 or 6 hours with no food or anything. And I for sure thought, we're going to need to pull over. Something's going to happen. We were both fine. And it was because we were running off of ketones the whole time. Now, if I was not keto adapted, I'm pretty sure I would have hit a wall and totally, you know, conked out or whatever. So that's your other option. If you're lifting weights, it's a waste of time. Mm-hmm. It's not going to do you any benefit to have carbohydrates.
There's no major advantage.
In the middle of your workout.
Next question is from Triana Alonso. Should foam rolling be done before or after a workout? How often and what are the benefits?
Depends on the workout, I would say. So foam rolling has benefits because it can improve movement patterns. But if you don't strengthen and do correctional exercise to prevent the bad patterns from coming back, then it's a waste of time. Mm-hmm. I like to foam roll before correctional exercise just to give me that better movement pattern. If I'm doing heavy lifting, I like foam rolling after.
At the end. I actually prefer that. And mainly, too, to get me in sort of that parasympathetic state. Like, I use it as a tool to kind of calm my body down and also, like, focus on areas that have been really restrictive in my exercises. And I want to address them while, you know, they're already warm. They've already gone through, you know, the workout. And to get me to kind of calm down and then to also address anything that I can improve upon going into then the next workout the next day.
I like talking about the foam roll because it was something that I didn't use at all for the first 5 years or so as a trainer until I started getting knee pain. Found out like how tight my IT was, right? And then I started to foam roll it and saw a huge difference when I would foam roll and then go play basketball. And that was like, then I was married to it. Then like anytime before I trained legs or did anything, I was constantly foam rolling. And then I was introduced into mobility and training with that on a regular basis before I would, and then I completely eliminated the foam roll.
Yeah, so you didn't need it anymore.
The only time, and every once in a while, you'll see me pull ours out because we have them here. And if I do that, it's because I overreached in a training session quite a bit, typically in legs. You know, I was going real heavy on squats or chasing a PR. And then the next day, I'm so sore that my gait is off. I'm kind of limping a little bit. Or, you know, you got that after hard training session of legs, your walk where you look like you have a stick up your ass. Like, if I'm walking like that, then I will get down and I will foam roll to relieve that to get me walking normal again. Mm-hmm. But then I'll just do mobility stuff before I train. I like that is the only time I use a foam roll. I use it as a Band-Aid right now.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't, and that's all it really is. And that was the part that I was missing when I was using it in the first, you know, part of my, or the back half of my career when I started to use it all the time before basketball. It's like, it became a thing that I was like, oh, I have to do this before I lift. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have to do this before legs. I have to do this before basketball because it helped and I noticed a difference from it. But what I didn't realize I was doing was I wasn't addressing the root cause. There was an issue with my feet and my hips that was causing this constant tightness in my IT that I wasn't addressing the mobility in my hips. I wasn't addressing the mobility in my ankles and my feet and the connection that I had, my foot strength. Yeah. None of those things were being addressed. I was just constantly, because of those things, I was getting this really tight IT that was hurting. It felt like a knife in the side of my thigh all the time to the point where I ended up getting bursitis in my hips. So I was constantly like, foam rolling to fix that, but it was never fixing it. It was just relieving temporarily. Mm-hmm. It wasn't until I got into mobility and I started to really spend time doing 90-90 and combat stretch and lizard with rotation and doing scorpions and like really focusing on my mobility drills. Then it got to the point where I completely eliminated foam roll. It's like useless to me now unless it's just a temporary relief.
Absolutely. If it's used in conjunction with a correctional exercise program to promote better movement so that you can then get into...
Yeah, unlock better movement.
Yeah, better mobility positions and more connection, then the foam roller is beautifully used. If it's used as a Band-Aid, it's really no different than taking Advil because you bang your head against the wall and never stopping the banging head against the wall. And that's true. I did the same thing, Adam. I found it. I used it. I'm like, wow, this works. And then I had to use it all the time, never really solving the problem. And then what ends up happening is slowly over time, because now you're training through the problem rather than correcting the problem slowly ends up getting worse. This much foam rolling worked before. Now I got to do this much more. Now all of a sudden it's not working like it used to. So you want to solve the issue. So I would not use it on its own as a solution, but definitely in combination with mobility exercises to solve the root cause, then the foam roller is absolutely brilliant. And that's why I like to use it at the beginning of correctional exercise workouts. But if I'm doing a regular workout at the end, I love it. At the end, I love foam rolling areas that might have been a little overworked in my workout. Like if I did, for example, let's say I did a heavy deadlift workout and I really pushed it and I could feel the erector spinae muscles of my lower back or a little bit tight, and I'm like, wow, I pushed it a little too hard. At the end of the workout, I'll foam roll that area. Or let's say I did a lot of pull-ups, and I feel my, you know, my teres major muscle, which is at the top, underneath your armpit kind of area, and I'm like, ooh, that feels a little bit overworked. Then I'll foam roll that at the end of my workout. Or if I did heavy rows and my, you know, my forearm muscles are a little bit tight, you know, then I'll use a foam roller or deep tissue massage. That's how I like to use it with traditional workouts. But if you use it with correctional exercise, then it becomes a very valuable tool. Look, Mind Pump is recorded on video as well as audio. What's up, everybody on YouTube? Come find us, Mind Pump Podcast on YouTube. Also, you can find all of us on Instagram. You can actually find Doug is on Instagram too. He's at Mind Pump Doug. You can find Justin at Mind Pump Justin, me at Mind Pump Sal, and Adam at Mind Pump Adam.
Thank you for listening to Mind Pump. If your goal is to build and shape your body, dramatically improve your health and energy, and maximize your overall performance, check out our discounted RGB Super Bundle at mindpumpmedia.com. The RGB Super Bundle includes MAPS Anabolic, MAPS Performance, and MAPS Aesthetic. 9 months of phased expert exercise programming designed by Sal, Adam, and Justin to systematically transform the way your body looks, feels, and performs. With detailed workout blueprints and over 200 videos, the RGB Super Bundle is like having Sal, Adam, and Justin as your own personal trainers, but at a fraction of the price. The RGB Super Bundle has a full 30-day money-back guarantee, and you can get it now plus other valuable free resources at mindpumpmedia.com. If you enjoy this show, please share the love by leaving us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes and by introducing Mind Pump to your friends and family. We thank you for your support, and until next time, this is Mind Pump.